The final edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for audiences who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like cake. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hi, I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And I'm Sotirios Hendra, formerly known as Tony Hendra.
And this is the final edition Radio Hour.
We have a hard-hitting show for you this week, because there's a lot of people in the news who need to be hit hard, possibly in the kisser with a 2x4.
But first, some of the news stories we decided not to touch with a heavily sedated polecat. We haven't touched the moo cow moocher, Clive and Bundy, because, frankly, it's folks like Clive and Bundy
He's Ted Bundy's kid brother, by the way.
It's folks like him who are going to make satirists like us obsolete.
And we haven't got much to say about the Ukrainian Prime Minister's accusation that Putin's trying to start World War III, except this will mean his country will be known as Ukraine.
Ugh, that's terrible. That's why we satirists...
Kaboom! Make that ruble bounce!
I give up!
And for the 6 week running, we haven't found a way to finally trash that little mother tucker, Carlson.
But we do have an inside report on how the world's poor, put-upon billionaires are going to push back against equality.
We find out just how much this American life loves sports.
And of course, we celebrate Shakespeare's 450th birthday, which occurred this week, with the last two Beatles.
So fasten your seatbelts in that GM or Toyota vehicle, and away we go with
the final edition
Radio Hour.
The next portion of the final edition Radio Hour is brought to you by...
We're a part of your community. We're your employer, your protector, your all-around good neighbor Sam. We are America's prison industrial complex. And all we're asking for is your kids. See, we're one of America's fastest growing industries, and we help make this country unique. America has nearly 25% of all the world's prisoners. Boy, you'd think that'd be enough. But we need more. We need to lock up all your little boys and girls. So, as soon as you hear about something new or unusual, such as, I guess, downloading things, what the heck is that anyway? Well, if you don't understand it, pass a law against it. And make sure you have tough sentences. That's how young people learn. Do that, and you won't have to be scared anymore. Help us out, because we're putting up more prisons every day. And just like the rest of us, prisons get lonely without children.
Hi, this is Tad.
And this is Connie from The Morning Show. Confused about investments? Friday, we get a visit from Mr. Smart Money, who'll tell us how to plan for the future.
Connie's plans for the future usually involve finding a designated driver.
Tad suffered a financial meltdown with his last girlfriend. He tried to leave without paying.
Speaking of fiscal disasters, Connie will tell us about how Visa refused to raise her debt ceiling.
And after that, Tad's ex-wife will explain how Tad thought he was too big to fail.
That's Friday on The Morning Show.
And now, after the, quote, massive and unprecedented, unquote, assault against al-Qaeda fighters in Yemen, which killed at least 65 militants, a spokesperson for al-Qaeda gave this statement.
Hey, U.S., what the hell, man? Sneak attacks are our thing. Okay, U.S., good one. You got us. We were taken completely by surprise. Good one. But what the hell? So, we showed you a video. Big deal. Yes, we had a pep rally in Yemen. Where we always do. On Chuchbab Street. In Go Yemen My Lemon Square. I kid. I just call it that. It's my own private joke. None of the other militants get it. Bin Laden said it was unfunny for years. But seriously, it makes me laugh. But to the point. Come on, U.S. So, we have a little parade. We show off our new flags and costumes. We taped all of it and sent it to CNN. Does that mean you have to drone us? Well, okay, we just watch CNN daily to see where we are going to rain terror. Okay, right. We probably should have thought that through. Good one, U.S. See, who says we can't learn from each other? All you have to do is start training outside of Vegas, and boom, we're practically the same. All right, U.S., good one. Tip of the AK-47 to you. You got our new shoe bomber guy. He was only 10 years away from inventing an undetectable airport security shoe bomb. You would still need to light it like a stick of dynamite, which would look outrageously suspicious. But still, you got our guy who makes bombs that don't work. We're always like, come on, man. Why didn't that bomb work? And he's like, I play too much Xbox when I should be working on the bombs. And we're like, oh, come on. True story. Oh, and you got our chief choreographer. That's the tape we didn't send to CNN. Our full terrorist regime official Al-Qaeda choreographed dance of Pharrell Williams Get Happy. AUS, I doubt you would have killed all of us if you saw us all dressed like the little yellow dudes from Despicable Me 2. Okay, good one, US. You got us. Now that you're paying attention, there will probably be payback. Where Americans don't care. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know you're happy. The final edition is pleased to bring you the final, final episode of Friends, the one where New York disappears altogether.
Scum. All you fake New Yorkers, there's one thing I don't need. Another fucking bike lane at a store that's called Duane Reade.
Phoebe?
Monica Chandler, it's good to see you guys.
Why are you taking my watch, Phoebs?
Duh, it's because I'm a mugger, okay?
You'll have to excuse Monica. She didn't know you had become a common street thug.
It's not like I can mug indoors.
We were on our way to see the old neighborhood.
Yeah, you're in it.
This? This homage to faux suburbia by way of the Epcot Center and another reference I can't think of at the moment?
Good one, funny man. Phoebe, where's our old coffee house, Central Perk?
It has a new name now. Capitalist Bastard Greed Prick Palace of Crap!
Isn't that a little long?
Yeah, they shortened it to Duane Reade.
I was wondering when we'd see another Duane Reade. It's only been 5 feet since the last one. Do you mind if I run in and get some flavored lip balm?
You can't go in there. I hate that place. I'm opposed to everything it stands for.
All right. I won't go in.
If you do go in, could you get me some flavored lip balm?
Carriage rides! Who wants some nice carriage rides?
Joey?
Sorry, ma'am. The name isn't Joey.
What is your name, my not at all unconvincing non-friend from the 1800s?
It's totally different from Joey. It's, Sir Joey.
Good one, Joe. Hope no one cracks that code.
Why are you wearing a top hat?
It's a sign of gentility from 200 years ago to make bastard prick tourists feel better about abusing horses.
It makes me feel all British. I feel like we're back in London, baby!
Phoebe, why are you mugging me but giving Joey a free pass about subjugating horses?
I'm sorry. I know I'm against that, but he brings me tourists to mug, although it does make me feel all floopy.
Is there nobody that this city hasn't changed?
Here's my brother Ross, who still works with dinosaur bones at the Museum of Natural History.
Hi. You mean the Museum of Climate Change Denial?
Who changed the name?
My new boss, David Koch.
Hey, guys, I gotta get back to work. Anybody want a ride?
Can you take me to another Duane Reade? This one's out of gummy dinosaurs.
Ross, where's Rachel?
She's in there talking to Gunther. He's the manager. She's autographing all the magazine covers she's on. She'll be a few hours.
De Blasio, De Blasio, what
Are they feeding you? De Blasio, De Blasio, it's not your fault.
President Obama's efforts to negotiate peace in the Middle East suffered a body blow this week when the Palestinian Authority reconciled with their estranged brothers and sisters of Hamas, and Israel finally found what they'd been looking for in these peace talks, a reason to suspend them. The Final Edition Radio Hour asked veteran peace negotiator and unindicted war criminal Henry Kissinger how he felt about the latest setback.
As we are well aware, there are many issues and aspects to consider regarding this conflict between the Palestinians and Israelis that spans many, many years. One must take into account and consider the plight of the Palestinian people and their strong desire for a state of their own while feeling oppressed by the Israelis. While the Israeli nation feels that it is under constant threat by its surrounding countries, accentuated by this issue with the Palestinians on the Gaza Strip. The issues at hand are massive, and much thought and care must be taken to dissect and find peace in this troubled land. But, in the end, I don't give a shit.
Hi, this is Tad.
And I'm Connie from The Morning Show.
As American Idol goes into the final round, our studio will be full of talented young performers.
What Tad likes to call a teenage buffet. And I will be trying to keep them from wandering into the S&M dungeon Tad calls his dressing room.
Speaking of people wandering into places, Connie, wasn't that you I saw yesterday sneaking into the men's room with the guy who delivers our water?
And speaking of delivering water, we'll welcome urologist Dr. Dunkelman, who'll explain why men of a certain age need to have their prostates checked. Relax, Tad. You might just enjoy it.
That's tomorrow on The Morning Show.
And now, the Final Edition Radio Hour takes you to Riverdale, where the country's oldest teenager is about to receive some news.
Hey, gang.
Hey, Archie.
Why so sad, guys? Jughead, your jaunty but out-of-date crown hat is wilting.
Sorry, Arch. We're going to a funeral.
That's why the jalopy is painted black. It's a hearse-loppy.
Oh, I thought it was because you couldn't afford blue paint. Hey, I told an unfunny joke, and nobody's laughing.
Sorry, Archie.
Sorry about what, Veronica?
I'm Betty. I'm Veronica.
You sound like you're the exact same person.
We are.
Come on, Arch. We can't be late, or the gravediggers get overtime. While the dead guy gets afterlife. And his relatives get his underwear.
Are you finished?
No, but you are.
Come on, guys. I'm not going any... Hey, what are you doing?
Taking you to the funeral home.
We're pallbearers.
That's great, guys, but there's only one problem.
What's that?
My name's not Paul.
Murder. Oh, Archie, Archie.
You're a teenage icon, yet they are whacking you. Ouchie.
Oh, gunshot, gunshot.
The tic-tac-toe on your head was the best, but this news I can't double digest. When I first saw you, you were with all the gang, Betty, Veronica, Reggie, and Jughead. Now they're burying you in Riverdale Cemetery, because now you will be Jughead.
Pour a little murder on me, baby. Pour a little killing on me, Archie.
I'm gonna make your death so sweet.
Hey, 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 hey.
Pour a little murder on me. Oh, yeah, Garfield.
Oh, Snoopy, Snoopy.
Which character will be next to receive a cartoon death?
Ah,
Welcome back to the final edition Radio Hour, Satire with Teeth.
You're watching MSNBC, Masters of the Teleprompter.
Welcome back to MSNBC Midday. I mean, midday. Well, the Supreme Court really stepped in it, like they stepped in it before. Now they've struck down limits on how much money a wealthy donor can give to candidates and political committees. But the court may have found one place where it still fears to tread, but it may be the path ahead. It's a very strange path. Indeed. It's a very strange path indeed. The court decided not to review Iowa's law banning corporate contributions in state elections. Good news, you say? This campaign has only begun to conquer politics with corporate money. Joining me to talk about this is civil rights icon Norman McAuliffe Ransom.
Good afternoon.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Norman. Let's start with a video of you saying something 50 years ago for some reason.
And the National Guard met us at the steps. The organizers remained calm. We've got the rally is set for tomorrow, and the governor has threatened us with major police force.
So inspiring. So, Norman, with this recent Supreme Court ruling, you know, Mitt Romney wasn't alone when he said corporations are people. I really think people like the Koch brothers are massing behind that idea. It seems to me that as far as the right is concerned, that is the next great civil rights battle.
Uh-huh.
I don't actually have a question for you.
Then I will be on my way.
Coming up, Republicans have lost campaign issue. Have lost Obamacare as a campaign issue. What about that?
Though red states feel uncomfortable with same-sex marriage, some conservatives have found something they do like. Our Pepper Lewis reports.
Merton Earl and his friends in the town of Placid, South Carolina, were complaining about gay marriage when they had a revelation.
Well, we were saying if I could marry another guy, I could marry a giraffe, or I could marry a toaster, or I could marry my shotgun. And then I realized I could marry my shotgun.
Merton's parents said they were shocked when their son announced he would marry a 22-inch Browning A-Bolt 12-gauge with a 3-inch chamber and a satin walnut stock, but they've since come to accept it.
They're always together. He's got a million photographs of the thing.
And he talks to it.
He does. For hours. And you know, I think this sort of gun love runs in the family.
I experimented a little in high school.
But Merton's friend Tateman says he's having a hard time dealing with this.
It's one thing if two men get together and they know what they're doing. But is a gun really aware it's making a lifetime commitment? Is this altogether fair to the gun? Oh, who am I kidding? I was in love with that gun, too. Why didn't I speak up first?
We're here at the ceremony where Merton and his gun are taking their vows where they first fell in love. In a deer blind, covered in buck urine.
Do you, Merton Charlemagne Earl, take this gun to be your lawfully wedded gun, to aim and to fire, in sickness and in health, until it's pried from your cold, dead fingers?
I do.
Then by the power vested in me by the great state of South Carolina, I now pronounce you man and gun. You may now kiss the gun on the mouth.
Hi, I'm Chad.
And I'm and Connie from The Morning Show.
When you're ready to go to work, we'll be ready with all the traffic reports so you won't be stuck all morning on the freeway.
It could be worse. You could be stuck for the last 7 years on a piece of crap morning show with Tad.
Speaking of being stuck somewhere you don't want to be, the office gal drops by to explain how to lose that dead-end job. I'd say just work as hard as Connie does, and you'll be fired.
And speaking of things that are dead, Tad's going to tell us about all his hopes and dreams.
That's tomorrow morning.
On The Morning Show.
WBEZ, Chicago.
It's This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. In our journey with this program, we have covered all sorts of topics that have surely driven you into a black depression, from high schools that had to cancel proms because of too much gang violence, to the hopeless stories of people who are slowly killing themselves with addictions, and just when you think they will persevere, they die. These stories do not make us uncomfortable to report. We actually delight in sharing tales of poverty, murder, and disease. However, there is one topic that makes us all very uncomfortable. Sports. Nancy Updike reports.
Sports. I don't even know what that is.
Nancy, the Webster's Dictionary gives us the definition of sports as, an athletic activity requiring skill or physical prowess and often of a competitive nature.
That sounds absurd to me. Why would anyone compete?
Or be physical. Yes, I understand. However, people do actually do this. Here, maybe noted author and NPR regular Sarah Val can help explain.
Nancy, sports is when we've had Mike Birbiglia tell a story on the program for the past 30 episodes, and it's the same story.
No, Sarah, that's not sports. That's just because we love the soothing, non-threatening tones of Mike Birbiglia, and so we can give ourselves a smug, oh yes, I get it, chuckle to ourselves.
Oh, right, of course. Oh, yes. I know it's sports now. David Sedaris making fun of tourists in Paris.
No, Sarah, that's not sports. That's a charmed life.
Well, then I'm as lost as Nancy.
I know. It's a topic that's too frightening to even digest the concept. Okay, let me try to explain. It's a thing that involves sweat most of the time.
I'm afraid.
So am I. It usually involves a sort of running, and there is a score involved.
Are you sure that's not Mike Birbiglia?
No, it is not.
I thought everything was Mike Birbiglia.
Well, we all do, but it is not.
Then what is it? What is this horrible, horrible thing called sports?
Nancy, remember your NPR voice?
I'm sorry, Ira, but this sports is insanely frightening. I'd rather talk about ethnic genocide.
I know. So would I. Let me try to explain in our terms. We discovered that Mike Daisy did not report the entire truth in this program, The Agony and Ecstasy of Steve Jobs, and we banished him from This American Life. However, if his next show perseveres and does well, he may become a regular guest again.
Ah, like the struggle of impoverished ghettos on the outskirts of Olympic chosen cities.
That's close enough.
I still think it's Mike Birbiglia.
This has been This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. Join us next week when we will resume ripping your hearts out and leaving you with a sense of utter hopelessness.
Almost exactly 50 years ago, my comedy partner Nick Ollett and I recorded a musical tribute to William Shakespeare on the occasion of his 400th birthday on April the 23rd, 1964. We did it in the style of the then very young, very new, and very famous Beatles. Now, a few days after April the 23rd, 2014, on the occasion of William Shakespeare's 450th birthday, here it is again.
Wow. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether tis nowhere in the pie to suffer for the slings and arrows of a raging foe, but you love to take on the gates of sea of troubles and by opposing in them. Tonight, please, no more of my fate to say we are the honey and
Welcome back to the final edition. This is so exciting. We have been celebrating anniversaries a lot lately, and last week it was the 30th anniversary of the release of Spinal Tap. Now, to our great surprise, we were contacted after our segment by a key person in the success, if we can call it that, of the legendary band Spinal Tap. We were contacted by its ex-manager and still biggest fan, Sir Ian Faith. He seemed anxious to discuss our use of the term slimeball, and I think maybe scumbag, when we were discussing his role in managing the band. So, that's right, everybody, we have him right now on the line from his current home in the South Pacific. Hello, Sir Ian.
Hello. Yeah,
good to have you here. But now, before we get started, please, let me first of all congratulate you on something I've always assumed, and now I'm glad it's true, your knighthood. We weren't aware here in the U.S. that you'd actually appeared on the Queen's Birthday's Honours List.
Well, actually, I haven't.
But you are a knight, right? A Sir of the United Kingdom?
Near enough. I was knighted by the, a monarch of the British Commonwealth.
Queen Elizabeth?
No, King Ahoitu Anuaki o Tonga Takahuhi Tupou IV of Tonga, where I now make my home. I was knighted for services to the nation, specifically moving the Rock and Roll Managers Hall of Fame to Nuku'alofa, capital of Tonga, from its original home in Dorking, England. Plus, there was a small knighting fee.
There was a place, or there is a place in England called Dorking?
Yes, it seemed like an appropriate place name for the Rock and Roll Managers Hall of Fame.
And let me guess, the Rock and Roll Managers Hall of Fame is a brainchild of you?
The Hall of Fame has been a pet project of my post-tap years, yes, but it belongs to the whole world now.
And who's been inducted into this Hall of Fame?
At one time or another, Andrew Oldham of the Stones, Richard Cole of Led Zeppelin, Malcolm McLaren of the Sex Pistols, and many other greats. Posthumously, Brian Epstein and Bill Graham.
And they've all been inducted. I mean, actually, physically inducted.
Well, not Brian Epstein or Bill Graham. They're long time dead. You seem skeptical somehow about this legendary institution.
Not at all. No. Why would anyone express skepticism about a project founded by Sir Ian Faith? But on the subject of death, there's something I should clear up for our listeners. Aren't you supposed to be dead?
Yes. Well, this goes back some years. As you may know, in the official history of TAP, they reunited in 1992 at my funeral in New York. The boys experienced such ecstasy, dancing on my grave, that they decided to get back together. That much is true. But the real truth is, I felt sorry for them, so in order to reunite them, I faked my own death.
Why would you pull off such a daring hoax? I mean, you could have been buried or cremated alive, or...
My motivation, as always, was the welfare of the band. Which intersects with your unwarranted allegations in Ray the term slimeball. And let me point out, as a parenthesis, much of what we call slime can be very nutritious. You could live for years on pond scum and never get cancer. Metaphorically speaking, balls of slime are rarely what they seem.
Well, why are you defending balls of slime? It would seem like that.
A year before my death, TAP's business affairs had become, let's say, tangled. I felt it best to take upon myself responsibility for these various, well, indiscretions.
Indiscretions on your part?
They were collective indiscretions I'd individually undertaken in some cases involving massive fraud as a representative of the band, but only as a representative of the band, not on my own recognizance. Perish the thought.
So you were defrauding people on the band's behalf?
Not to the best of my recollection, but yes. I had received advances from interests in Eastern Europe for albums that were yet to be recorded. Such sums tend to get eaten up like that when you're funding a band with the artistic sweep of a Spinal Tap. Anyway, that was when I quite openly embezzled large sums to draw attention away from the potentially damaging indiscretions that had been committed by the band collectively without their knowledge by me.
Well, that certainly could lead to a reputation as a slime ball, but now I know your pure motives. I must say, most managers would not make that sacrifice.
My strategy was to make sure the authorities would blame only me for those apparent crimes, and then kill myself.
And then the band could blame you, too. Wow, you made yourself a martyr for them.
Exactly. As it says in the Bible, greater love hath no manager than that he lay down his life for his band.
It takes a certain subtlety of mind to grasp that you would steal from someone for their own benefit.
Exactly. Precisely. It was beyond the band, frankly. But I've always said the band's talents are intuitive, not cerebral. They don't have minds in the usual sense of the word.
Okay, but how did you actually pull off this amazing hoax?
Well, it's remarkably easy to die in New York City. All it took was a hotel manager with long experience in dealing with overdosed corpses on his premises, which happens every day in the Chelsea, an apparent three-week drug binge, a sympathetic undertaker I'd met in Beirut called Hassan, 6 scuba tanks of oxygen in the coffin, and $11,000, plus tips. I won't go into the details, but being alive for your own funeral is a harrowing experience. To hear Nigel yell in the cemetery as the first clod of earth hit the top of the coffin, "Ta-ta, Ian, come back as something I can eat."
Wow, that is cold. Considering all you've done for them, or all you've done to that point at least, it's pretty heartless.
Not for the first time, I should add. Years ago, during one of our Japanese tours, I was having a bit of a fling with David's girlfriend, Janine Pettibone.
Really? Wow. After all the conflict you two went through, on screen at least, during the filming of the documentary.
That was all for show. We'd been bonking for months.
Huh.
So David got wind of it and took out a contract on my life. And gave the contract to Nigel. So Nigel tries to off me with this bright day-glow blue rat poison. It shows up on salad, you know. It's supposed to, so you won't eat it.
This goes back to the band not having minds in the usual sense of the word.
Exactly. And I miss them on some level, I must say. There's one thing about cretins. They're easy to manage. But I put all that rancor behind me.
Well, you know, it must be hard now to get much professional traction when people think you're dead, right?
Yes, but music is a universal language, isn't it?
Yeah.
And as Hemingway said, go further. Or was it the Marquis de Sade? After all, I was only dead in England or the United States. This was the late 90s. Hassan knew some moderate Iranians inside Iran who wanted to soften Iran's image in Europe and Asia. Boom! I'm teeming with ideas. I set up a label, Moderate Records. They love it! Millions of riyals pour in from Tehran. Boom! I come up with a new band, the Mullahs of Invention. They love that too! More millions!
Wow, that is, sounds like you've definitely...
I found some Turkish kids in Bremen who looked Iranian, bought them a Marshall stack and some Gibson's SGs, but they had no songs. Now, I'm sitting on this back catalogue of songs by a group called Spinal Tap, which, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist anymore.
So that's how Spinal Tap's back catalogue ended up in Tehran.
I slipped the songs into Moderate's catalogue to get them started.
You sold them to the Iranians?
No. I contributed the catalogue to the mullahs for a specified time in return for my salary. Technically, it's owned by...
Ali Akbar Hashemi Rasfajani?
Technically, but spiritually... they still belong to Tap, and always will.
So you had re-established yourself as a player in the rock world.
Well, after that, I made a foray into world music. I went to South Africa and lined up some very interesting musicians.
Oh, like Paul Simon did?
Yes, but very much unlike him as well. My chaps were white. Afrikaners. This was after apartheid, so they didn't have much to do. And they incorporate a lot of fascinating elements not usually found in black African music, like bass drums and tubas.
What kind of music do they play?
Military, but with a sort of umpah flavour. It can be very moving, and their choral work sends shivers up your spine.
Do they have the same message of peace and brotherhood that Graceland had and still does?
Well, no, but white bigots are everywhere on Earth, too. Don't they have the right to their own world music?
Well, I guess when you put it like that, sure. What's the group called?
Raceland.
Okay. Now, to wrap it up, I want to ask a question that's on everyone's mind, all the fans out there. Any chance of your ever getting back with Spinal Tap?
Oh, that would be a dream, Jeff, to be back with the boys. Not that it would be easy. But I am the fifth member of Spinal Tap, you know, they're Pete Best, Brian Epstein, and Murray the K, all wrapped up in one. And there are so many memories, so many difficult memories.
There's a lot of history there.
My whole point is that what you call slime ballery, the embezzlement, the fraud, the illegal transfers, the skimming, was my way of saying, I love you, Tap. I'm very fond of our body of work together, our oeuvre. The boys aren't boys anymore. Not a hair between them, and I've still got all of mine. They're coming up fast on that old bucket. Yeah. The only time I'm likely to get down with Spinal Tap now is at their tribute concert.
Wow, are you sure you meant that I love you, Tap?
Listen, a few years ago, I got into the market with something called CDDOs, Compact Disc Derivative Options. Very complex rock-related financial instruments. I won't try to explain them to you. You're a creative person. Anyway, I built up huge holdings and just at the right moment shorted the market. Now I live in a South Pacific paradise with my beloved Janine and my two younger wives. Life is good. And you know why, Jeff? It's all sex, drugs, and no rock and roll.
All right, well, that sounds like a lovely way to live. Thank you for joining us. Newly knighted, I suppose, Sir Ian Faith of... formerly of the band Spinal Tap. And once again, a great interview here on the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Welcome to the President's Report for this year's Conference of Closeted Homophobes. This is always far and away the most popular part of the convention. So let's bring up our president, Ed Tramfor, to tell us which gay stereotypes we can get away with this year.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I have been studying the upcoming batch of sitcoms, movies, and comedians, and I'm very pleased to report that it's apparently going to be all right to laugh at Screaming Queens again.
Our prayers have been answered.
Please, please calm down. Please let me finish. There are conditions. These Screaming Queens have to be black. They have to be fat. And they have to be friends with psychologically damaged white women. Now, I think we can all agree this is something we can live with. Any questions?
Yeah, do these gay men still have to be experts about the personal lives of straight people?
Very important point, yes. Even if a sitcom character is a screaming queen, he still has flawless insight into the fashions and romantic relations of his straight friends. These screaming queens continue to be unusually concerned about the personal lives of straight people. And yes, all gay couples still eventually have children.
Well, why can't we start claiming that gay men are trying to make us gay? That was my favorite part about college.
Baby steps, John. Let's not overreach. So, everybody, just review. The following is still offensive.
You silly goose, I'm going to slap you senseless.
Oops.
That's right, that's bad. But this one is okay.
Oh, honey, I love me some makeover.
That's right, folks. Now go out there and have a good time.
The once person with talent, Lindsay Lohan, has publicly acknowledged that she kept a list of her past lovers. Now, here's Christopher Walken to read some highlights of that list.
Lohan's sex list. Whoa, here we go. Justin Timberlake. Not surprising. Guy's a fox. Channing Tatum. Josh Hartnett. Bunch of foxes. Tom Sizemore, weird. Katie Lang, oddly not as weird. Leonardo DiCaprio's cousin, Ronnie. A dude standing next to the doorman at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. A busboy at Nobu. Then the dishwasher. Hugh Dancy. Dustin Diamond and Skeet Ulrich at the same time. Two of the chicks from Orange is the New Black, guess which ones? No, not Crazy Eyes. Tara Reid, expected. And, whoa, Christopher Walken, surprise! It wasn't that great. Boom!
Since you don't have $1 billion, you probably weren't invited to an exclusive forum in an undisclosed location on an unannounced date, possibly underwritten by the world's richest man, Mexican Carlos the Jackal Slim. Our Stone Peck was also possibly not there, and he might not have filed this report.
Angered at repeated calls from governments in developed countries to raise taxes on them, the Forbes 400 most pornographically wealthy people ever are pushing back. Hard. Charles and David Koch, who combined are the richest person in the United States, said the time had come for insanely well-off people to cool it with individual entrepreneurship, pool their awesome resources, and take control of the planet they own. Charles and David Koch.
Watch out, organized labor. Here comes organized management.
John P. Manning, the Boston capital genius who squeezed $1.1 billion of blood from the low-income housing stone, file under How Does He Do It, had a practical suggestion.
Why don't we start a union of the super rich called the Fraternal Order of Billionaires Global Local One? Its mission would be to protect the inalienable human right to make more money than you'll ever, ever need.
The appallingly well-heeled attendees roared their approval, with one exception. Spanx thong mogul and ex-terrible comedian Sarah Blakely.
Hi, y'all. I object to the word fraternal. Why not maternal? Or sisterhood?
Hey!
Fix me a drinky poo, sugar bun.
That's
what I said.
Steel Baron Lakshmi Mittal, the world's 20th richest man.
I suggest each impossibly pampered plutocrat present here today pay annual dues of $100 million to keep out mere multimillionaires. The trillion-plus war chest thus created can be used to take out busybodies like UNESCO, UNICEF, the World Health Organization, the International Confederation of Labor, the whole hyena pack of NGOs, and Elizabeth Warren.
It could also be used to finance traditional union strong-arm tactics, like arranging accidents for uncooperative politicians.
Walmart Air Christy Walton.
Collective bargaining by FOB Global Local One will mean huge increases in net worth for us hard-working financial titans.
Nations and regional trade groups that don't play ball can be brought to their knees in days by an FOB strike.
Casino King Sheldon Adelson.
Yeah, when we say strike, we don't just stay home from work. We mean, you ever want to see your currency alive again? You do whatever the fuck we say.
To express the spirit of the conference, billionaire Oprah Winfrey taught the 400 a new version of that old union hymn, The Internationale.
Arise, ye richest of the earth, the international smirking class will rule the human race. Arise, ye prisoners of taxation, arise, ye richest of the earth.
The final edition radio hour.
Will Durst here with a few choice words about the tsunami of tech currently engulfing the nation and, in the process, redecorating communities like a family of grizzly bears in a Volkswagen van. A family of highly paid, bespectacled grizzly bears with a taste for $4 toast. Remember back in high school when the freaks and geeks and nerds were ostracized and used as the objects of our scorn and derision? Well, pull out that letter sweater, because those days are back again. The nerds have lost their soft, fuzzy aura of lovable underdogs and are now viewed more like hipster locusts, laying waste to neighborhoods with a voracious appetite for quinoa, kale, and $6 cups of designer coffee. Here in the Bay Area, Google has become the face of the evil empire with their high-profile projects such as Google Glass, the wearable computer only available to a precious few, and the Google buses, which use municipal infrastructure to ferry the precious fewer from cities central to their campus in Silicon Valley. All men are created equal, but obviously some are more equal than others. Most distressing are the alterations to cities where the texters have descended. This October, when shares of Twitter employees become vested, 2,000 millionaires will hit the streets of San Francisco, and people will speak dreamily of the good old days when a studio in the Mission with no parking and the smell of old men embedded in the walls only cost $3,500 a month. Raising the question, who are the real glass wipes here? The insular, entitled techies blissfully traipsing down sidewalks, laughing at cat videos on their face-borne computers? Or the rest of us, desperate for handouts, poised to wipe their windscreens clean with our mini squeegees? For the final edition Radio Hour, I'm Will Durst.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is performed at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hendra, Jeff Hendrick, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lenk, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, Ann Tuchel, and Darby Worley. The Final Edition Radio Bruce Hour Cherry. Is written Jen, at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hendra, Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lenk, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition Radio Hour is produced by Tony Hendra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast producer Barry Lenk. The Final Edition Radio Hour is edited and audio produced by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.